business leaders need to take a responsibility for the fact that they keep collecting information about their customers, and they have an obligation to protect that information and take it very, very seriously.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Thomas Fekensha, Regional Director for CyberArk ANZ. And today we're discussing cyber leaders taking a seat at the boardroom table. So Thomas, thanks for joining. It's wonderful to have you here. I know we met at an event last year, which literally feels like 5 days ago, but I'm pretty sure it was 6 months ago. So thanks for joining. And it's wonderful to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I really want to start with the boardroom table. Now, there's a lot of conversations happening at the moment because of what's happened in the market around, you know, the CISO needs to be at the boardroom level. Now, this isn't a new discussion, but would you say that the CISO is on the lower end of the pecking order of the boardroom table? Now, I ask this, Thomas, as traditionally CISOs haven't really been at the board level, and they're probably perceived as the new kid on the block. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a fair statement. It would certainly appear so that they're at the lower end of the pecking order. My impression from lots of conversations that I've been having with executives in various organizations across various industries indicates that CISOs are not fully represented yet in the boardroom. And when I say the boardroom, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a position as a non-executive director or a director on the boardroom. It could also be represented in a subcommittee. I think it's starting. It's heading in the right direction, but very slowly. And it's not just an impression. I think when we look at numbers, they're telling a similar story. I give you more of a global perspective because I don't have the specific ANZ numbers, but Gartner on a global level predicts that 40% of boards will have a dedicated cybersecurity committee overseen by a qualified board member, up from about less than 10% today in the future. So you look at a very low level of representation today, but there's certainly an intent to improve that. If I translate that into Australia a little bit more, I have seen risk and security subcommittees being set up, and some of them now starting to actively involve CISO and sort of the wider cybersecurity group of leaders in their organizations into board level conversations on a sort of monthly basis. So, yeah, so the statement I think is fair, but there are some positive signs on the horizon to improve that situation.
And so you said that statistic was 40%, is that correct?
40%, yeah, it's the prediction of Gartner for the future, up from less than 10% today.
Wow.
There's also actually another interesting figure, which is coming from an executive search company, which is Heidrick & Struggles. So they find leaders for boards and executive teams. Their number is that only 12% of CISOs sit on corporate boards today, and that's a global figure.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, there was someone I was interviewing the other day. He's actually a good friend of mine. He works for another vendor, and he was saying he did some, AIC or AICD course. And he said, I was the only one there that had any tech background and like any cyber background. And there was like 50 of them in there. Like, that's pretty low in terms of one person out of 50 that had a remote, like broader tech background than broader cyber. But if you think about it, like most companies now, if you really want to get to the nitty gritty, are technically tech, right? They're all, you know, they're either e-commerce sites or they're running something on the internet. So I'm sort of curious as to know, like, why there would be not as many, even if we speak more broadly from a tech perspective, why there's not as many people from that background, because majority of businesses now are tech-based. So I'm kind of, like, curious to know, like, do you have any insight on that? Like, I know it's not necessarily an easy one to answer, but it seems kind of obvious that we should have more, even more broadly tech, and we don't.
It's astonishing, isn't it? There's this saying that every company is becoming a technology company in the world of digitization, because you're talking about a bank, and the bank is now full of fintech and technology. In mining organizations, they're all talking about automation and digitization. So you would expect to find a lot more people with a technical background. My personal read on this is that I think there's a necessity to get aligned on key topics and then start to translate them into plain English. The language being used in the tech community is sometimes a language that not everyone understands. There is an assumption that business leaders should be able to pick up what tech leaders are saying, but I think there is a divide. So it needs to be a little bit more plain English. I think there is also a tendency amongst cybersecurity leaders sometimes to dramatize the landscape rather than being a bit more rational about what's the context of cybersecurity in the wider business management. That's another area I think that could be changed. And I think the third one I would point out is when it comes to organizational structure, people could be a bit more creative and find that alignment between boards, executive management groups, and then the cybersecurity community. So you could create these subcommittees, but you could also say, hey, we have a forum where there's a board member present, and there's a CIO present, there is a CISO present, and there are some leaders from the business community, like chief digital officer present, and they talk about massive CapEx projects and the risk associated with them. So I've seen that in a mining business recently. They do exactly that on a monthly basis, one of the largest mining companies in the world. And they talk about automation technologies, massive CapEx spending on, for example, autonomous trains. They're going up and down the west coast of Australia, but they're talking about cyber risk, they're talking about business benefits, and they do it in a very professional manner. So I think that alignment is necessary, and then we might see a little bit better alignment between the technology community and the business community.
So there's a couple of things in there, Thomas, I'm curious to know. You said before, plain English. So can you give me an example of what like people should be saying? Because I do understand exactly what you're saying, but I'm curious to know, like, from your experience, what are things that people are saying that like the broader board just don't really get?
Yeah, so when people talk about cybersecurity, you very quickly go into technology language. People talk about security operation centers. They talk about threat vectors and the shift from a traditional data center model into this hybrid working world and the new parameters, identity, and all these beautiful phrases. But if you come from a business world, you don't necessarily understand what that means. So I think it's important to contextualize that. And when I say contextualize that, I'll give you an example. If you're in a retail environment and you talk about technology, retail leaders would understand that they run a store network. They would understand that they have to protect their stores from any disruption in the sense of business continuity. They would understand that if they have a flood in the stores, they can't trade. They would also understand if you tell them that if a cyber hacker brings the store network down, they can't trade. So what is the threat there? It's maybe in-store access, like who has access to technology in stores, what kind of threats could appear from that. All of a sudden, it becomes a little bit easier to digest if you bring that in the context of a normal operations rather than using overbearing technology language. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. Why do you think that, because what you're saying makes sense, right? Like, you know, everyone comes out there, there's so many, threats we blocked and this is what's going on. Like, that's always the case. But why do we keep doing this? Like, we say, let's speak in plain English, but then we're not doing that. Like, some people are, and I don't like to ever paint everyone the same brush, but we're just still not kind of saying stuff in plain English so that our board and our executives can kind of get it. So what you're saying makes perfect sense, yet we're still failing as an industry to do that.
Transfer thinking is the word I'm using very often. It's you're used to operate in a certain environment. You speak to your immediate group of stakeholders on a daily basis, and you use that kind of language, and all of a sudden it becomes normal to yourself. And it's like, that's the language that's being spoken. And it's very, very difficult to say, and now I'm going into a different environment and I have to be very careful with the wording that I'm going to use and somehow find a different approach and use different phrases or statements. So it's almost like a habit. And if you're not aware of that, then it's very hard to change that. So it's awareness. And I think exposure on a more frequent basis to different stakeholder groups, because if you do that and some people look at you and they don't know what you're saying, you might be more mindful. So I think mixing people up from different backgrounds on a more regular basis and let them discuss these topics would probably help.
Yeah, sure. So what you're saying is it's probably that, what is that, forest and the trees analogy? So people probably can't see past themselves because they're in it every day, but people should be more cognizant when they're going into these meetings. So, for example, I don't know, if you're a doctor and you rattle off, you've got something wrong with you and they use the long version of the name, and then you as the patient are like, so what do you really mean? Like, oh, like you've just got a flu. Oh, okay, well, that makes sense. And that contextualizes it in my mind that you're using all these scientific terms, which in our space we're using technical terms, then we need to then change the phraseology and the terminology so that someone who's not from that background kind of gets. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying, yep. Said it better than I did.
Well, I was just sort of repeating it back to you, that's all. So we mentioned before that the CISOs are on the lower end of the pecking order, only because they're new kids on the block, they haven't been around, you know, at the board table for that long. So what would be your advice then to sort of move them up the chain? Now, I'm not saying they need to be top dog, but how do we get them from being sort of on the bottom to getting towards the middle? I mean, the top would be amazing, but, you know, I'm being optimistic here.
Yeah, so it's a good question. I thought about that a lot, and I'm trying to test my theory in some of the conversations I'm having. I think what we need to do is we need to get from this sort of negative topic into a more positive topic. So what I mean by that, cybersecurity always has a negative connotation because it's like it's a threat. The world is going to be set on fire. You know, people are going to take our energy networks down. So it's this sort of doom and gloom scenario very often. I'm not a fan of that approach. And I think if we change that notion into something more of a positive conversation, we might get a different outcome. So what I mean by that is if you talk about cybersecurity in a sense of an improvement of evaluation of a business, if you had proper cybersecurity hygiene, is a very different angle. If we believe the idea that data is a key asset and that asset has very, very high value in any organization these days, regardless what industry, then it's logical to say this asset needs to be protected. So if I do a proper job in the protection of that asset and I want to sell parts of my business or I want to buy into another business, wouldn't I look into proper cyber hygiene as a valuation item? So the better that's protected, the higher the valuation of the business. That's more of a positive conversation rather than a negative conversation. Or you could say, if I'm going to invest a lot of money into digitization efforts and I do that securely, so I'm really doing security by design, I'm looking at what could go wrong if I expose people to, as I said, you know, autonomous trains or autonomous vehicles or, you know, interfaces which actually process a lot of data. I do that by design, then the digitization effort is probably protected. The investment that I'm making is protected rather than has a high risk of disruption. So all of a sudden, we're getting into more of a positive conversation rather than a negative conversation. And I believe that needs to happen. And if we do that, we probably have a much, much better board conversation and a much better business conversation.
So why do we as an industry always default to FUD? So fear, uncertainty, and doubt, because like, I'm not a fan of that either. But then you kind of have to give the reality of what's happening in the space, which then can sort of feel a bit doom and gloom. A lot of people are still out there selling FUD. Why are we still doing that?
It's the Maslow pyramid, right? You go down to the basic fears, and fears seem to cause reactions. So you say, hey, this is a massive threat, so give me some money because I need to fix it. The world could go up in flames. I need to fix that in the next 6 months because we've got a massive problem, or the, you know, legislation is changing and we're going to be fined and penalized. So it's a typical scenario where it seems to have worked in the past, where all of a sudden you say, oh, it could be massive risks. I'm giving you more money for the program. I think it might work in the first couple of times, but over time, I think it's a fairly trodden path and probably overused path to cause a reaction. So I think, especially at the board level and executive level, a rather positive conversation about the benefits to a business in investing in cyber hygiene, cybersecurity would probably work better. So that's my personal opinion on that.
Okay, so just say someone's listening to this interview, they're like, okay, I want to sort of, you know, move my way up the chain, fair enough. I'm going to take some of, you know, Thomas's insights, knowledge. Do you think that, like, is it still going to be like a bit of a process? Like, I know it's not going to be like, oh, I say one thing and then, you know, next minute I'm, you know, King of the Jungle. I'm not sort of saying that, but is it still going to be like a bit of a process that people have to work towards explaining things before, like you mentioned, around like cyber hygiene and positioning things differently? But that's obviously not going to happen overnight. So how can people start to chip away at, you know, getting it taken a little bit more seriously at the board table? Or do you think it's just going to be time?
Well, first of all, I think if you look at the risk items that are typically sitting in the board agenda in a regular meeting, there is all sorts of different risk items. Organizations talk about financial risk to a business. They talk about sovereign risk, in particular if they operate in different markets. Is there anything changing in foreign markets for us that it calls sovereign risk? They're talking about supply chain risk. But I think the first thing is to add another risk item. And I think the risk language would resonate. That's probably low-hanging fruit in my books. Talk about digitization risk, talk about cyber risk, because they're very closely connected. So if you put that as a standing agenda item and you frame that in a risk element, I think that would be a good topic. If you that have a standing agenda in that space, then bring things like legislation changes into the mix. Talk about topics like changing data privacy rules in Australia. Talk about what the federal government is doing in terms of the risk management programs that need to be introduced. The famous SOCI Act, all of these things can be brought into the conversation because they create context. And from there, I think you get into a more regular conversation step by step, and that allows you to introduce these, what I said, more positive notions of, hey, if we did that, would that actually have an impact on our valuation as a business? Would that strengthen our brand as a business? So you get into more of those topics as well naturally. So that would be, for me, a good progression to get from where we are today to a much more sophisticated conversation.
And would you say that boards are receptive towards that? Because again, like I said, they're new kid on the block, like, you know, we're not speaking in plain English. So do you think that they are, or do you think they're just saying that to placate someone, to be like, oh, okay, well, yeah, we're listening, but we're not really, because I don't really understand you, or I don't really understand your space, so I'm just sort of kind of going to glaze over what you have to say?
I believe they are. I mean, the sensitivity has certainly heightened, and the massive breaches that we experienced in Australia, high-profile breaches in the last 6 months, and they keep coming, has created awareness. So I think there's certainly an interest and openness to change that and be aware. But it's also how you do that. I give you another example. I think it was very, very well done by a CISO, actually in New Zealand. It's an example from New Zealand. That individual would be invited to board meetings on a fairly regular basis, and he would always talk about the work that he's doing, but he would talk about preparedness for certain cyber attacks and reducing what he calls the blast radius. But he would then engage different executives, but in a very professional manner. He would go to a financial leader, so a CFO, and say, I can tell you where your most important data assets and information repositories are, and I can give you my opinion whether they are protected in a sufficient manner. And in most cases, the CISO would say, I don't think we have the protection. We could improve in certain ways, but I need your endorsement as an executive leader to say that I understand what you're talking about and I'm going to support that. And I think I'd like to have that in writing as well. And by having these kind of conversations, he gets commitment, he gets endorsement from different business leaders, and that starts to spread into the board meeting as well. So I think that's a good way of doing things. So yeah, that's my viewpoint on how we can change the current landscape.
So do you think moving forward that it's going to be incumbent now that boards must have some type of cybersecurity caliber on their board? Because like historically, like you need a finance guy, like your CFO or something, like you need someone from that background in order to be like, oh, you know, we look at the P&L. Is it going to be the same sort of thing, like the finance person, we have to have that cyber person now moving forward?
I believe so. I think it's a natural progression. The more damage we see in businesses and in industries, I think the more obvious it becomes that we have to have that capability at the board level, because it's a consequence of business continuity. If you have these massive damages in organizations where you lose customers, where you have hundreds of millions of dollars of fines, then I think it becomes very, very clear that it's a strategic discussion, and it's a question of strategic management and oversight. So my view is yes.
So if historically we had more cyber caliber on the board, or cybersecurity caliber, sorry, would you envision that we would have less breaches that, you know, look at what's happening in Australia last, you know, 6, 7, 8 months, what's been going on. Would you say that that would be decreased if we had more representation from a cybersecurity perspective at the board level?
It's difficult to predict. I would say logically, some of the things could have been prevented by having a more proactive approach for preventative measures, rather than talking about how do we dealing with a crisis. Dealing with a crisis is a reactive measure. Talking about preventative measures is a different story, and I think that should happen at the board level, because you also need to authorize relative investments. It should start with critical infrastructure businesses. That's a big discussion in Australia. If I run a financial services organization and I need to have credit flow in the industry and availability of currency and trading capabilities, I think I have an obligation to do that. If I run an energy company and I'm providing energy services, manage critical assets, I think I have an obligation to do that. If I run a hospital with an emergency room and it's critical services, they need to be available, I need to do that. So I think in my books should start there. That's absolutely a necessity. And then it could certainly flow from there into other industries, which are probably less critical, but they also have massive damage if they were disrupted. So, for example, a manufacturing business that all of a sudden loses manufacturing capabilities would also have a lot of damage. It might not have the widespread damage to a broader population group, but it's still pretty damaging for the individual business. But it should certainly start with those essential services, and they should have that permanent capability on the board, and I think it would have prevented some of the blasts and pretty catastrophic events that we've seen in the last 6 months.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I know you're not Nostradamus, so I was just more so curious on your thoughts. So would you say that boards at the moment are sort of like scrambling to sort of get a security person? Because, I mean, like, there's not that many security people in general. I mean, depends who you ask. But then even more at that senior level, is it going to be hard to find that type of caliber of person to fit that board level position from a cyber perspective? Or do you think that we're just going to have to be like, okay, well, here's a cyber person. They may not be the most senior person, but at least it's someone.
It seems to be hard to find. I mean, first of all, it's very hard to find enough people to enter the cybersecurity industry. That's a problem in general. We have too many open positions. We haven't got enough participation in the industry yet. Also, it's very clear that it's a growing industry and it's a lot of work to be done. And that's not just an ANZ problem, that's a global problem. So if that's already an issue, then if you look at that community and you look at experienced people out of that community who could potentially serve on boards, there's probably a very limited pool of them available. If you don't have that from the cybersecurity community, could you find some other business leaders who basically do almost like a crash course in fundamental knowledge of cybersecurity that they could then, you know, combine with their previous experiences and serve on boards? I think we need maybe a little bit more on the education side. You mentioned AICD before. I'm not sure whether we have programs at the AICD that would allow people to have more of a broader context, cybersecurity and business combined. So there might be a need to offer that, even at universities, at certain industry bodies to offer that. So there is certainly shortage, I believe, but there is also not enough or not a clear path for education to get ready for a board position in a particular area.
Yeah, most definitely. And I do agree with you on that front. It's hard to get people in general. Did you say there's someone listening to this, they're like, hey, I don't have a cybersecurity person at the moment, trying to find one, I'm trying to recruit one. What can they sort of do as like an interim step, like a band-aid solution? Like, yes, they're trying to find someone, but they should probably have still some representation or some external advisor or something just so they can get someone a little bit more permanent. Is there any sort of like thoughts or insights you have on that front?
I think you will find some good people in the consulting companies and the consulting community. They're ramping up that investment. So I'm talking about the big global consulting firms, Deloitte, PwC, even Accenture. Those organizations, they're certainly ramping up. And I think they typically have a very strong business lens. They're looking at the problem more from a business perspective than a technology perspective. And I think that's exactly what it's needed. So you could potentially get someone from those organizations, even a secondment, and bring them into the board as a representation. That's an idea. If you have a board member who puts their hand up and says, "Hey, I think I've got a good foundational knowledge of technology, but I think I need to dive a little bit more into cyber," you could ask that board member, or sponsor that board member to maybe work at organizations like PwC or Deloitte for a little while, or even talk to some technology vendors and create a bit of a program, so to skill them up. I think that's a model I could think of. I think there might even be a shared resource. There are some people out there who have had a career in that space, and they might be able to share their time and they could serve or share experience with multiple organizations. I think that's another angle I could see. So I think there are things you could do to fill that gap, even if it's just until you have someone more on a permanent basis.
So would you say that, moving forward in Australia, we should start to see that uptake because of what's happened, in the last 8 months or whatever here in Australia? And because of ASIC regulations, and Claire O'Neill's come out and said, we will be penalising people quite heavily if there's data breaches and whatnot. So do you think that this is sort of the time that people are going to take this more seriously, or they're going to think about it more because they know that there is an issue, they're going to have a massive, they're going to have to be answering to ASIC and there's going to be penalties attached to it?
I think so. That there are changes in legislation. If you look at the Privacy Act, there's changes coming on that side, which is super, it's overdue. I think there's more than 100 recommendations to change the Act, and I think it will be probably more along the lines of the GDPR rules in Europe. They stipulate pretty severe consequences for organizations who don't take data protection seriously. I think that's the driver, and boards would understand that. I think that triggers action. The fact that we have under the Department of Home Affairs, we have a new National Cybersecurity Office. They sort of come up with more rules. The CIRMP, so Critical Infrastructure Risk Management Program, that needs to be put together by critical infrastructure companies within the next 6 months, is pretty consequential as well. Stipulates consequences for senior executives and boards. So I think they trigger action, and it's only probably going to get tighter and tougher from here. So from that perspective, I believe there is enough momentum to change the current position.
Do you think as well that because of these recent events, we've had to, they were terrible, right? But we had to get to that level before cybersecurity was taken a bit more seriously at the board table. It sounds bad that people had to suffer and organizations suffered from these, breaches in customers. But I just don't know, if these things didn't occur, I just don't know if perhaps cybersecurity would be taken as seriously. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Again, human behavior and nature of human beings, we react when we feel the consequences. It's unfortunate that it had to happen, but at least we have now the awareness. Would it have happened without that? I think so, but a lot slower, at a slower pace. That would have still created some level of sensitivity, because it's driven by legislation. Even without these cyber breaches, slowly it actually would come into businesses as well, but I think at a much slower pace. The fact that you have these breaches, not just in Australia, but even overseas, has certainly triggered immediate action. So I'll give you an example in the healthcare space. It was a year ago, there was this massive breach over in the UK, or I think it was Ireland, at a national level, where some hospitals went down and the emergency rooms were not available anymore. Immediately after that, we saw multiple hospitals in Australia reach out proactively, because they were so shocked, almost traumatized by what happened overseas, and they realized, this could happen to us as well easily. And then all of a sudden, they sprang into action. So as I said, it just increases the pace of adoption and action. And that's human nature. I think it's unfortunate because it causes a lot of damage. And if you think that, I mean, you might have the same experience, but I've met people, multiple people recently who said in the last 6 months, I had to change my driver's license 3 times. We cannot be complacent about that. I think it's shocking. Business leaders need to take a responsibility for the fact that they keep collecting information about their customers and they have an obligation to protect that information and take it very, very seriously. Breaches help, make it faster, but legislation and the overall development towards digitization are also driving factors.
3 times is definitely a lot, and that's super annoying and frustrating because, I mean, going into what the New South Wales Transport, like you're in there for ages, right? So I feel annoyed by that as a consumer.
Yes.
So, Thomas, in terms of any sort of closing comments or final thoughts, is there anything specific you'd like to leave our audience with today?
Yeah, I think when we look at these skill sets that individuals need to be able to operate at a business level and bring more cybersecurity awareness in the business level, I think there's probably a few things that companies should keep in mind. I think they should look for individuals who have a good handle on understanding legislation. As I said, SOCI Act, privacy legislation. So it'd be a good starting point to have someone who has a handle on that. It'd be good to have people who understand industry standards. If you come from an energy environment, you know, understand what cybersecurity standards in an energy market needs to be, or you do the same thing in the FSI space, that would be also quite helpful. And I think most importantly, and this is what I constantly tell our own team and our customers, is let's try to find context when it comes to cybersecurity discussions and translate technical conversations into business language and cross that bridge back and forth, right? Find context, try to work out what could happen in a healthcare organization. Try to immerse yourself in healthcare operations, what's happening in an emergency room, what's happening when it comes to using of patient and medical information, and understand the potential threat for that, and then translate that back into technology that needs to be applied and cybersecurity that needs to be improved in that particular context. If you have people who have, you know, foundational legislation knowledge, a certain industry background, and have the ability to translate technology into business language, I think they're really the ones that you would want to have involved and bring further up to board level, executive level and board level, because I think that would make a difference.
Well, I think those are magnificent points to leave our audience with today, Thomas. So thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's been quite practical. There's been tangible insights that people can take away from today's show. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MERCSEC, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MERCSEC.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.